It is time for the AEW Dynamite review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Hello, Warren Hayes here, back again, once again, to break down the newest edition of Dynamite, which was what day are we today? We're the 24th, March 3rd, 23rd edition of Dynamite from Toronto at the Coca-Cola Center. Overall, I enjoyed this Dynamite. I thought it was a pretty good Dynamite. I wouldn't tell you it's one of the all-time greats, but I thought this was a really good Dynamite, nonetheless. Lots of good stuff. My usual little quirks and pokes, the stuff that I usually that I usually point to as problematic, all reared its head today. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm gonna start talking about something that without context, you won't know what I'm talking about. So follow the format, Warren. Jesus, for once in your life, just do as you're told. Follow the format, and we'll get to it. But if you're here, very nice to see you. Thank you. Still getting back into the swing of things, doing recordings and podcasts and all of that, such as this podcast right here. So thank you for being here. Like, subscribes, reviews on Apple Podcasts, ratings on Spotify would be tremendous. Thank you very much. And I haven't gone back to doing the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper yet. I'm getting there. What I'm doing in the meantime, if you're subscribed to my YouTube channel over at youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, you get little tidbits, little snippets, little bits and bobs of thoughts and news as the days go on. I haven't been really, over the past couple of days, I did some last week, haven't done really any over the past few days. It's really just a question of how I'm feeling, how things are going, and I also have appointments and all sorts of stuff going on. So ever since the incident, so I'm slowly getting back into this. This is me wading in the waters, trying stuff out, see what works, see what sticks. Bear with me, but some of you seem to enjoy what I'm doing over on YouTube. The little snips. I've been getting some good feedback, so. I will continue down that road. Again, like I said, just bear with me. Recovery is a process, I am told. Getting back into acceptable human form, shape, or a human form. So bear with me, and thank you for bearing with me. Thank you for still being here. Let's get into the March 21st. March 23rd. Did I say March 23rd? No, March 20. I'm completely confused in my day. See, this is why I can't go back to podcasting full time yet, because I'm just confused. Things confuse me. It's not as if I was better at this stuff before, but you know what I mean. March 20 edition of Dynamite. Recording this on March 21st. We mentioned over at the Coca-Cola Coliseum at Toronto, Canada, Ontario, Canada. See, this is what I have a couple of Canadian pet peeves here. Just a couple of Canadian pet peeves, before we move forward here. Like Toronto is a big city. It's the biggest city in the country, right? It's our metropolis. It's New York Junior, whatever you want to call it. It's the biggest city in the country, but it still exists within a province, right? And, for those of you who are maybe not quite aware of how Canadian political geography works, we're divided into 10 provinces. The United States, for instance, I know that's a lot where my audience is from, is divided into what, 51, 52, 50 states. I never quite understood that. Yeah, some people tell me 50 states. No, there's 51. No, there's 50. Like, who? It doesn't matter. Whatever. So no one in the United States says that someone is from, let's say, Los Angeles, United States. Like, no one says that. They'll say they're from Los Angeles, California. They'll say they're from Boston, Massachusetts, not Boston, United States, right? No one says that. And it happened, I think, I feel like twice, but there's once that I actually remember during Swerve's promo where he says, Toronto, Canada. And I'm like, hang on a second, pal. Canada's a really fucking big country. We don't all like within the same. Yes, it's a country, but it's not Toronto, Canada. It's Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I don't know why. The point that I'm making here is that this happens so often with in wrestling promos. Then again, I get it, you know, from Americans, right? They'll just, you know, they won't say the province. You know, we'll be in Quebec City, Canada, and it's, no, you're in, that's not it. And if you say you're going to be in Quebec City, Canada, you're probably pissing off a whole bunch of people here in Quebec City to begin with. That's a whole other podcast and a whole other discussion. But you know, and there's a couple of things, like, they're minor quibbles. Don't get me wrong. It didn't detract me from my enjoyment of the show. It's just these things jump out at me where I'm like, no one says here, yeah, where do you, Toronto, Canada, you know, besides no one will actually say I'm from Toronto, Ontario. Someone will say I'm from Toronto and that'll be that. However, there is a Toronto on Prince Edward Island, that I think has like 30 people. There's 30 people in the entire population of Toronto, PEI. So if you ran into someone from Toronto, Prince Edward Island, which is a province, by the way, in case you're wondering what the hell I'm talking about, if you run into someone from Toronto, Prince Edward Island, and you say, hey, where are you from? And they say, I'm from Toronto. And they don't give you the extra context of PEI. I think they're bad faith lying to you. I don't think you can get away, but by saying, as an islander, to just say, yeah, I'm from PEI. I'm from Toronto. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm from Toronto. And then, oh, Toronto. Hey. You know, how about them Leafs? You know, like you can't leave. That just opens up a whole bunch of references that aren't there. They're from a little hamlet on Prince Edward Island where there's like fucking 30 people who live there. At least I think it's on Prince Edward Island. It's out in the Maritimes of Canada. Anyway, are we already off track? Tickets. According to WrestleTix, 6,278 tickets distributed. This was not the final tally. This is not the final tally. They were opening up a little more on the same day, hoping for some good business. Not bad. They did better than the Rampage that came to the Coca-Cola Coliseum in October 2022, where they did 5,500 nonetheless for a Rampage. That was very good. Very, very good. Those were the days. But less than the Dynamite from October 12, 2022 at 7,394. So again, like, these aren't disastrous numbers. These are, in fact, very good numbers. Right now, for what AEW is doing, is good. And I think, look, if they continue down this strategy of... If they keep going down this strategy of running smaller venues, let's call them intimate, more intimate venues, because the Coca-Cola Coliseum is not a... It's not a big time arena. It's not like, you know, there's no NHL teams that run there. You know, it's like, it's a smaller venue, right? It's like 10,000, 12,000, something like that. So Yeah, we get it. This is better. This is better for them. If they run, what I'm trying to say is that if they run these smaller venues, I think it's better because everything benefits then. The atmosphere, the crowd is hotter. Everything's better. Everything's everyone's you know it the arena feels filled. You know, I've always said, you know, you might as well run smaller venues and fill them out than the opposite. Selling out a smaller venue is still a sellout, regardless of what you're doing. It's still a sellout. If you're running a building like the Videotron Center next week in my hometown, it's an 18,000 seat arena, right? Like it's a pro hockey arena, right? Modern, contemporary, supposed to have welcomed an NHL team. That never happened. Again, that's a whole other podcast. But if you run an 18,000 seat venue and you don't have 2,000 tickets distributed yet, probably a little more by the time today is done, after hopefully the match announcements will move some tickets. But like last time I checked, there's about 2,000 tickets. There was still under 2,000 tickets distributed. That, you know, that feels a lot more empty. It's a lot less interesting for the wrestlers, you know. It's a lot less interesting for the fans too, you know, because you're sitting there and you're seeing an entire section of the arena that's blacked out. There's no one. It does change the atmosphere, the feeling of being there. And yet, on top of it all, if you run these smaller venues, but there's people everywhere, then you can get the full arena shots like they were doing on Dynamite last night. And isn't that fun? Instead of always fucking cropping off the one section, always considering that you can't do a full pan of the arena. That's annoying. That stinks. So if this strategy continues, I think it's good. I think it's very good. Anyway, this is a good number for AEW, so primo for them. Good job. We'll see. Well, you know, I'm interested to see what the final numbers are going to be. Tony Schiavone starts off the show in the ring to introduce Mercedes Moné before just giving her the microphone and hitting the bricks. Listen, she talks a little more about, how she was almost... Basically, what she does is she breaks down her history with Willow Nightingale, leading from the New Japan Strong Women's Championship Finals, where she got injured. She goes all the way back to that, making sure that it's all clear for everyone that she has unfinished business with Willow, and that if anyone tries to get in that business is going to go bankrupt because there's a price to pay when you mess with Mercedes Moné. See, that's a jingle right there. She was referring to Julia Hart and Sky Blue, who interfered, got their noses into her business last week, and then the lights go down, they come back up, the spooky girls are there, there's some attack, you know, there's attacking, Moné gets overwhelmed, Willow comes in for the save, lights go down again, and Chris Statlander is there as well, excuse me, there's also Chris Statlander, so Statlander, Willow, they come down for the save, and the lights go back down, so the spooky girls disappear, Willow is in the ring, and she's holding a chair ready to crack it at the back of Mercedes Moné, who turns around and sees that she has the chair, and she's like, "What the hell, man?" And then they're like, oh, well, and they jawed each other. And this was a Pepperman sign segment. You can taste it. You can taste the pepper on this one. This is highly seasoned with pepper. It almost makes you want to sneeze. Hachu. Let's go a little before I talk about it more. Let's go a little more ahead. We'll jump in time to a little further on in the show where we come back from a commercial. Renee Paquette is there backstage with Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. Stokely is there as well. They're hyping up the street fight that they're involved in tonight. Monet comes in. She thanks Statlander for having Willow's back last week. And then she goes off on, you know, CEO stuff, paybacks, whatever. And then, you know, says it's nice to meet her. And, you know, Willow sort of takes offense to this. And then she backs off, right? Pepper tastes like pepper. Now, I'm sure a lot of you right now, you know, you're going, oh, here he goes again. There goes old man Hayes talking about, you know, talking about stuff that he doesn't understand. No, that isn't. Talking about how much this is going to be like a WWE segment. But it is. It is. You can't get more. I didn't mention it. I'll mention it now. But when Monet's segment starts, she starts by throwing to the video wall. You know, how many times have you seen that on the other show? Right? And the opening set, the opening promo here, oh my God, there's so many things I want to say at once. Let me reiterate. I am always of the belief that a promo opening a show should open a show when it has like these earth-shattering implications. Monet starting off the show last week, absolutely, I get it. You know, I always call back to, you know, when John Moxley came back from rehab and they had him open the show, you know, and he told that guy to piss off, right? You remember that one? So I'm like, I get it. Like, these are important promos. You want to get this. You want to start with this. It's significant. And I understand why they're starting the show with Mercedes Monet again this week. I get it. Like, yeah, there's multiple reasons. You know, they want to make sure that they get the audience reeled in. They want to make you know, people tuning in to see her. Well, they'll see her straight off the bat. They're also protecting her to a degree. You know, people say, oh, they want to do a big quarter hour. You know, when that's the argument I see. Well, they want to pull a big quarter hour. You go back to any television show anywhere, the first quarter hour doesn't need protecting, you know. It doesn't need like a big star to kick it off. It's always like the biggest quarter of the show, whoever they put in there. If anything, they're still protecting Mercedes, if you ask me. I think there's two things going on here. Yes, on one hand, they want to captivate the Sasha fans, right? The Mercedes Monet fans, the crew, people just tuning in to see her, whatever, you know. They want to grab them and hopefully, you know, be like, well, why don't you stick around and watch the rest of our fine. Our fine program here tonight. Yeah, sure. And I understand that. I think they're also protecting Mercedes still, because no one will be able to point to this and say she's not drawing ratings. She's not, you know, she's not doing the job here when she's in quarter hour one. You know, no one will be able to say that's, she stinks. That's not good. It quarter hour one. So there may be some of that as well. You know, let's talk, you know, later down the line when she's placed in different QHs across the ratings spectrum here, when she's put in, you know, at different moments in the show, then we'll be able to start judging, you know, whether or not she can, as the kids say, a pop a quarter. So we'll, you know, we'll see how things go. But right now, like, I don't see. I understand why they do it. Why they do it, like, from a business standpoint. But creatively speaking, there was no reason to start the show with this promo. Like, there was nothing that could have waited a little later on, kicking off hour two. Like, is it just me? Like, there was nothing crucial that kept us from starting Dynamite with a match. Now, coming back to the peppermint aspect. Look, I cannot. I've told you guys and gals and non-binary pals this multiple times. I can't sit here and not point to things that the other company does that are infiltrating AEW. Right? I'm gonna hammer this home. AEW is meant to be a challenger. It's meant to be different. It's not meant to be the same. So they should not be doing the same things as the others. They should be trying to do things differently. So when I see when they throw to the video, the guys in the back, and then they do it's ostensibly a video package for Monet, who is in the ring. Well made, don't get me wrong. I'm not bitching about the video package itself. But this gets thrown together, put on a big screen, and it's like, this is a Raw thing. Like, I'm sorry, but it is. It's something that I see on the other station, on the other show, on Monday nights, on Friday nights. That's how they do their thing. You know, you remember when this happened last week? Roll the video, you know, and what are we doing? Like, let's do things differently. That's all I'm asking. But we've got Peppermint. I'm going to pronounce it Peppermint. That's probably how she pronounces it. Jennifer Peppermint, who's there, who's done this for years with WWE and coming in, and she's writing for Sasha and she's adding stuff to the... And it's the same thing with the interview that they did. You know, again, a very WWE thing with the interview with Renee Paquette, where the two wrestlers are hyping up their match, and then the third wrestler comes in. Oh, you know, I wasn't just behind the camera all along. Hi. You know, and then they do their little interaction, and then they leave, and then they just leave it hanging on. Then they leave, the interaction ends, and the camera stays hanging on the wrestlers there for a little too long doing mug faces. You know, it's like, look. Again, it's not something that necessarily ruined my enjoyment of last night's Dynamite. It didn't deflect my enjoyment of Dynamite. But these are things I have to point out to you. Because last year, that's what happened to us in 2023. And I'm going to be honest with you all. Let's go right ahead. Let's pop this zit. I'm going to be honest with you all. I'm a little anxious moving forward here, because we're following this an eerily similar pattern as we did last year in AEW right now, where the start of the year, January, February, started off so strong, and we had a tremendous pay-per-view, one of the greatest. You know, Revolution 2023 was an absolutely tremendous show, and we had some great stuff leading in. And then as spring sort of came, and as the winter began to thaw, then we started moving more into sports entertainment stuff. Then we had the MJF, Adam Cole bit, which was good for a while until the Brochacho stuff hit in full force around... around Double or Nothing, if I'm not mistaken, maybe just a little after that. And then, you know, 2023 turned out to be like a creatively disastrous, not all of it, but for a substantial part of it, a creatively disastrous year for AEW, which I still believe turned away some fans. And I think they're Right now, AEW is gaining fans back by having switched gears and went back to what made them what they are, what made them what they are in the first place. So I'm seeing these little tidbits being sprinkled here, and I can't tell you that I'm not worried at the prospect of this. Wrestling has a really bad track record when it comes to history repeating itself, because it does. I'm sharing this with you right now as an anticipation, okay? As something within me that is just a little unnerving, and it's not an outright concern. It's not something that I want to spit on. It's not something that I'm not crumpling up the papers and throwing them out the window. It's none of that. I'm not throwing dynamite to the wolves, but I have this concern right now in regards to what we're doing here, and these little elements being sprinkled in already. I'm not entirely confident here. You know, there was a Pro Wrestling Insider report earlier this week talking about how, you know, the conditions and what got Mercedes Moné to swing towards AEW instead of WWE. And they talked, and the report talked about Peppermint, where it was said that, you know, she's not only going to work with Moné, she's there to help the entire product. I'm like, okay. I am not excited about this. And I wasn't excited when it was announced that she was hired, despite a lot of the freakazoids telling me, no, this is going to be great. And, you know, yeah, I have to call a spade and call it when I see it. The shit that I don't like on Raw that made me stop watching WWE, when I start seeing it on AEW, I'm like, okay, this is the stuff that made me stop watching the other guys. And almost, you know, brought me to a breaking point last year with AEW. So again, like, I'm not completely disregarding everything, but I am anxious about it. I hope that the direction that Tony Khan told us that he was taking for AEW towards the end of last year, which actually really materialized around that period, and especially at the start of 2024 here, I hope that that's the vision that remains prevalent, and we don't fall back into bad habits. Because look, Maxwell Jacob Friedman is going to come back at some point. He's going to come back. And how is this feud going to be handled? And knowing his propensity for sports entertainment, how is his feud with Adam Cole going to play out? Because that's what he's coming back for, essentially, right? Anyway. I'm not exactly confident. And these things just irate me. They just make me uncomfortable. Because I want to like this show. I want to like this show. But the minute I start making too many compromises, then I fall into patterns that I was in with WWE, and that's just not good. It's poison. Now, for me, anyway. I thought her promo, coming back to the promo itself, I thought Mercedes' promo was not as good as last week's. I thought last week's was killer. I thought this week was, you could feel it was a little more put together. Again, no issue with that. It's just, look, We know Mercedes Moné's her promos have never been a strong suit. Never, ever, 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 ever. And yet we're putting her, you know, weeks in a row with a microphone in hand, alone in the ring, to cut a promo when it is not her strong suit. When everyone wants to see her wrestle. Now, I understand the concept of keeping her first match in AEW for the Pape. That's good bookings. But what do you do with her in the meantime if she's going to cut? Like, she's not Will Ospreay, right? Where you trot out Will and he's just coming out in his Billy Goat wear. I don't know what he calls his line clothes. But he comes out in his clothes, his clothing line stuff, and he hits the ring and he just cuts an impassioned promo and everyone's like, fuck yeah, you know, there's a ticket sold. Like, she's not Will Ospreay in that regard. And yet we've had Will Ospreay wrestle on Dynamite. The interesting dichotomy that has always existed with AEW is that you have some of the best professionals in the world, professional wrestlers in the world, and some of the best talkers in the business as well. Some of the absolute prime promo people in the business. And but you can be as good as a promo as you want, I think, or as bad. People will always get over in AEW through their work, through their in-ring work. Example number one is Jamie Hayter, I believe, you know, who is, you know, who never spoke. They never gave her mic time. You know, we're talking back when she was Britt Baker's minion, right? They never gave her mic time, but she'd get in the ring, she'd kick ass, and people would just absorb that and be like, yeah, she fucking rules. I kind of feel that's the strategy you have to take with Mercedes, is let her go, let her wrestle. I still maintain she's the best of the four horsewomen. She's very good. And I think that's how she gets over. And she can have as many outfits as she likes. She can have as many, you know, different hairdo. What do they even call that? What is the process? The hair with the designs. Is it like a transfer thing? You know, like you do with like heat transfer t-shirts kind of thing, where you lay the shit over and you take a hair dryer. And I don't know how that works, but she can change her hair as many times as she wants. In AEW, it is her work that is going to get her over. It's just as simple as that. That's what's going to get her over. And I think the more they try to make her into a good promo, that's going to backfire. I think. I've already seen people with the hot takes that, oh, she's over now. She's done. Jesus Christ, man. 2 weeks in, she's over. It's done. There was nothing egregious. Again, there's nothing outlandishly terrible, but she's not a good promo. And I love Mercedes Moné. I really do. I soft spot for her. I will always have a soft spot for her, but I can also recognize her weaknesses and what she excels at, and her promo work is not where she excels at. You know, I think she has to let herself be natural, like she was last week. That's where she's going to win. If she over rehearses and lets Peppermint over script her promos, it's going to come off as phony, plastic, contrived, not unlike your typical WWE promo. And that doesn't fly in All Elite Wrestling. It just doesn't. You want people. You've got Eddie Kingston, who spills his guts out on every promo. And why is he one of the most over guys in the company? You know, John Moxley, same thing. Will Ospreay right now, just tremendous. Like, no one comes in with these standardized with these standardized promos using verbiage that no human being in a normal conversation uses. Outside of certain academic circles. But this is not academia. It's pro wrestling. Pro wrestling is grimy. It's grimy, it's dirty, and it's stupid. And that's... And I say that lovingly. And that's what it should sound like when people talk. Anyway, let's get back to the show. After the opening promo, we get some footage from earlier today where Alex Marvez once again gets harassed by the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada. And Okada calls out Eddie in English. Which leads us to the first match of the night, the AEW Continental title match, where Kazuchika Okada defeated Eddie Kingston to win the belt. I thought this was a very good match. I enjoyed this tremendously. I thought this was tons of fun. And the crowd was so hot for this. They were so terribly hot as, Kingston delivers chops and then Okada does his dirty tricks and, you know, does the DDT on the floor. But then again, the DDT on the floor, he was doing that in New Japan in the last couple of years all the time. Like I said, the crowd is super hot for this. Eddie Kingston suplexes Okada but runs into a drop kick. We get an over-the-knee neck breaker by Okada, who then runs into the back fist. Kingston blocks a rainmaker. But Okada gouges the eyes, hits the landslide, and the rainmaker proper that time for the win. Look, I gave this match 3 3/4 stars. I thought this was a tremendously good match. This was a lot of fun, a great opener. I don't know what you want from me. Like... This is and Okada gets belted up, his very first taste of gold, and for what they're giving him, for what how they're positioning him, having him arrive in Ferraris, and like it makes sense. They're really going back to the entitled rich boy. So there he goes, parading around with some gold around his waist. It's tremendous. Okada has become look. So many people had wondered, myself included, in all fairness, wondered how Okada was going to adapt to the North American style of television, right? Which is completely different as when he does New Japan shows, especially when he's the top guy and he basically dictates everything that goes on in his match, right? There were some concerns. A lot of people were wondering, well, how is Okada going to pull this off? I'm going to tell you, he's pulling it off like a champ. Do we have any complaints? Is there anything like from the pre-tape segments all the way to the in-ring mannerisms, which are incredible? Like last week, I still have it in my brain when he's taunting Eddie after Eddie's partners get thrown off the apron by the Bucks. Okada takes their place and he extends his hand to taunt Eddie, and I'm like, he gets it, like. Everything's working. Stares right into the hard cam. That's crucial. I mean, and the mannerisms that he has in here, you know, the facials. He's got it. He's fine. He's going to be fine. He's going to translate to North American audiences without a hitch. He's a top guy coming out of the company. He's going to be a top guy in this one. And right now, His gimmick with the Bucks is tremendous. Now there are people who think that all of this is bad for AEW, right? Mostly not because you'll always have the bozos, the legitimate bozos out there who will have very personal reasons for disliking a Japanese fella being on television, but. There's a lot of people who think that this is bad for AEW because this is a detriment because Eddie lost. Because Eddie lost the Continental Classic belt. And I think these people are just, they're getting worked and they don't realize it. They're just falling right into it, and it's tremendous. Cause, look, Eddie has always been at his best when everything is stacked against him. I've told you all in the past that I believe in all sincerity that Eddie Kingston is the modern day Dusty Rhodes. That he's a guy, you know, he's the everyman. He's the blue collar guy who fights against all odds, fights against himself. Like his struggles are very contemporary, you know. It's not just like fighting the man and so on. No, fighting his inner demons, fighting his mental health, you know, overcoming overcoming himself to get where he is. The struggle for Eddie Kingston has always been very real, and it's real for multiple people in North America. And Eddie's path, it resonates. So he is a modern day Dusty Rhodes with a modern day twist to it. But the promo work, which is sensational, you know, both tremendous promo. But what makes Eddie what complements this comparison is that Eddie is always better as the chaser, and that was the case with Dusty. Dusty never held on to world titles for a long time. He booked himself when he was a booker, but he'd win the titles, but he wouldn't have extended periods of championship gold for himself. They were always very short. Dusty Rhodes has always been about the chase, and it's the same thing with Eddie. People got behind Eddie despite the fact that he was losing matches right and left, that he was always considered an underdog. We'd root for Eddie because we believed in him because, like I said, every man reflection of who we are, relatability, etc., etc. That's what makes him compelling. Eddie as a champion, you're saying, all right, good for him because he achieved his goals. He hit a high point. He did something tremendous for himself, but now that he has them, you're like, all right, great. What's next? Like, it's not as compelling. It's fine. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he was a terrible champion. I think he was a pretty good Triple Crown champion guy, you know, but ultimately you want him to lose the belts and go back to chasing something else. Eddie on top of the world is not, it's not the best of Eddie Kingston. And I want the best of Eddie Kingston. The best of Eddie Kingston was him last year, you know, after a 2022 that was miserable, that he was, you know, sometimes, he had trouble getting booked. And in 2023, 2023 was his banner year where he had his first tastes of singles gold in AEW. He wrestled in Japan. He wrestled his heroes, his idols in Japan. He won a New Japan title. He wrestled in Korakuen Hall. He wrestled in the G1. Then he comes back to North America, gets into the C2, right? And he loses his first two matches, and he has a come from behind victory, defeats his nemesis, Bryan Danielson, to become a Triple Crown champion, just like his heroes. Like, that's it. After that, you know, whatever you do with Eddie Kingston after, it doesn't matter, because this is the longest term story ever told in regards to Eddie Kingston. This is his career story coming to a head. He had a beautiful 2023, and being an Eddie Kingston fan with it, You're into that stuff. You love it. But now he's dropping the titles. I predict he's dropping the Ring of Honor title to Mark Briscoe at Supercard in a couple of weeks. I predict it. I don't know what they're going to do with the New Japan Strong title. Who cares? It's like the seventh rung New Japan title, so it doesn't matter. But we're going to get Eddie Kingston back to, you know, back into his head, you know, doubting himself. Is like, but look at the promo he cut on social media after. Humble in defeat, humble in victory. you know, and congratulating Okada. You were the better man. And he said it himself. Now I'm worried. You know, and he says it sucks, you know, that I dropped one of my titles. I dropped one of the titles from my Triple Crown. That sucks. Now I'm not sure, you know, I got to focus on Mark Briscoe in a couple of weeks. Isn't this all great? This is good. And then we're going to get Eddie back to just regular old schmo Eddie. And then it becomes compelling. Then what's his next target? What's the next thing Eddie Kingston is going to do? Then it becomes compelling. I legitimately saw these discussions. People calling it a detriment. It's a disaster for AEW. And I'm like, what is wrong? What did you want out of this? A 500-day Eddie Kingston Triple Crown reign? Like, what the fuck? Why? You would get so bored from it. But that's okay. It just reminds me that there's so many people out there who think they have these great booking ideas, and I would never watch their promotion. I would never buy a ticket to their promotion. Ever. When I see things like this. They say, it's a detriment to the company. So, my God. Anyway, I'm 46 minutes into this to this review. Barely out the gates. Nice to have you all, folks. Let's keep... After the match, Kazuchika Okada gets his first challenger in Pac. No one can not be excited for that. That is something that I refuse. I refuse for you to not be excited about that. You come to me and you say, I'm not excited. I say, I refuse. There's a match. I'm going off on another tangent here. See... When the rumblings were that he was going to sign, you know, people were like, I imagine the matches we're going to get in AEW. Okada versus Mox. Okada versus Omega. Okada versus Ospreay, you know. And I'm like, these are all matches we've seen before. What about the matches we've never seen before? Like Okada and Eddie. Like Okada and Pac. Isn't that much more exciting? Okada versus Swerve. Stuff that actually feels fresh. I have no problem. If they want to revisit Omega Okada, we'll talk about it more when that happens. But, you know, I have high reservations on revisiting that match. But if they want to revisit matches, that's fine. And that's part of pro wrestling and the nostalgia aspect and, you know, that's promoter stuff and makes sense and it's compelling and it, you know, sure, I'm okay with that. But I'm here for the fresh matches. I'm here for the things that I never got in New Japan because of, you know, borders and promotion loyalty and all that bullshit. Renee Paquette is backstage interviewing Swerve Strickland. And he basically says that he's going to do an open challenge tonight. So at some point he's going to hit the ring and whoever wants a piece can come get one. Then we had the Statlander, Nightingale, Stokely, Monet promo that we already talked about. So that leads us to Hook defeating Chris Jericho in a match that happened. It wasn't very good. It was a mediocre match. I think it was below average. You know, but this is what's going to happen. And Hook, in this match, essentially walked the dog with Chris Jericho. Jericho tried to do shit and he couldn't do shit. Hook was dropping him on his head, suplex after suplex after suplex. And somehow, people are going to say that Chris Jericho is a leech. And he never gets people over. He never puts the young guys over. He never puts other people over. And yet we're going to come back to that discussion. Now, I want to nuance this. with, I did some thoughts about that recently. If you want to go check that out, it's on the YouTube channel. But I want to nuance this with, you know, I can't defend Chris Jericho, the wrestler, in 2024. You know, he's not the same guy he used to, even though he wants to come out to the Lionheart music and he wants to put on the Lionheart gear, which has been readjusted for the new size of his body. This was a little dull, but it takes two to tango. You know, Hook is getting there and getting in the ring with a guy like Jericho and doing this kind of stuff. That's tremendously valuable for Hook. And there's stuff you just can't take away here. And I know Jericho has tons of go away heat with all of you. I looked at this and I was like, man, this is not good. And Jericho's last outings, he wasn't very good. You know, I'm not saying it's time to hang it up, because I think he still has value, because he's still a name and they can still do stuff with him. I think babyface Chris Jericho has always been a lot less interesting than heel Chris Jericho. Always. So, you know, look, I really don't have much thoughts about the match other than Hook was given. Chris Jericho was more than generous. This is like Chris Jericho, you know, buying out FAO Schwartz and giving it to an orphanage. Like that. That's how generous he was. You can't just say, oh, he gave. No. It was all for Hook. This was for Hook. And people liked it. I think the live crowd enjoyed it. It wasn't a good match. It was, like I said, mediocre. I gave it 2.5 stars. It's, you know, nothing you'll ever remember. But again, like Hook on television, on an ostensibly big night for Dynamite in Toronto, where you have one title change, you have the big main event. I mean, these things don't come by accident. They come because Hook is booked with Chris Jericho. I don't know what to tell you. But somehow, people are going to say that Chris Jericho is a leech and he doesn't do anything for the business, doesn't do anything for AEW, doesn't do anything for the guys. Excuse me. Somehow, this is going to turn against him, despite the fact that he was literally letting the kid dump him on his neck 10 times or so consecutively. It's stupid. Like, don't fall into these trappings. Use your brains. Realize what's going on. You can ask. Asking whether it's effective or not is another question. And sometimes it's not always up to Chris. You can put a guy over as much as you want in a match, but if the guy, or in a feud or whatever, but when the feud is over, if the guy isn't booked properly or isn't seizing the moment to make himself into a star, that's not Chris Jericho's fault. You know what I mean? What else have we got? Adam Cole cuts a promo sitting in his opulent chair. You know, he sort of he was sitting there in his vest and he had like a fireplace in the back. And I thought he didn't do one of these, you know, with his hands. But I got a vibe where he looked like one of these late night show hosts, like back in the day, you know, for the whole, you know, that would introduce you to the scream feature, the horror feature of the night, you know, like Vincent Price. No, starring Bela Lugosi. That's what he reminded me of. He's disappointed in Wardlow, but sort of reminding us that Wardlow was supposed to give him the title. Anyway, this story is still ongoing. It's going to come to a climax. Max, see, there's a joke when MJF comes back. Chris Jericho's backstage. He said he wanted to face Hook one-on-one for a reason, and he's got a proposition for him next week. That I'm a little more wary of. Unless it's a heel turn, we get Chris Jericho back to being the bad guy in all of this. But I don't know. How much blood can you squeeze out of this stone? Will Ospreay comes to the ring to cut another swinging promo. And even tying in some long-term story here, apologizing for how we acted at the Forbidden Door last year. Saying, I've grown, I've changed, sorry about that. And this is all, again, setting up for the big fight, the Danielson, his fight with Danielson at Dynasty in a couple of weeks. And, but, you know, he's like, well, you know, I saw Danielson wrestle Katsuyori Shibata last week on Saturday, which, by the way, was a tremendous match and the most Shibata match Shibata's had since he's returned from injury. And if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it. So he says, well, look, if Danielson's going to fight Shibata, I'm going to do it too. Because something about filling shoes. Look, it doesn't matter. What this led to was the AEW announcing that next week, Will Ospreay will be fighting Katsuyori Shibata on Dynamite in my hometown. Now, I hadn't bought my ticket yet. I'm a smart cookie. Because I follow the business. And I'm like, I'm going to wait. Well, I got some really cheap tickets to go watch. I bought them today. I got some really cheap tickets to go watch Will Ospreay and Katsuyori Shibata before my very eyes. That is how you get someone into a building. Anyway, impassioned. Another great promo. Another great entrance from Will, who just has big room energy and is going to be the top guy of this company. And I'm sorry for everyone else. I'm sorry for every other AEW original who's there. This is going to be the top guy of the company. And if the rumors that this is Danielson's last year are true as an active full-time pro wrestler, of course, this is always the caveat. You have to have someone in your pocket, right? Ospreay's 30 years old. Ospreay's 30. He's got so many great years ahead of him still. This is tremendous stuff. Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa defeated Mariah May and Toni Storm. This is all right. Fine little match. Setting up stories here. We're continuing the story. You know, well, look. Thunder Rosa pinned Toni Storm. So technically speaking, she should be next in line for the title. But within the match, Deonna Purrazzo was a little annoyed because Rosa tagged herself in to get the pin or to wrestle and then eventually get the pin. So Deonna Purrazzo is annoyed. So when I hear about AEW doesn't do stories for the women's division, I think to a degree they're right. But when I see this kind of stuff, or it's like, oh, they only put the women in tag team matches. But look at this tag team match, develop stories, create these all important, crucial stories. You've got two right here. You've got a new challenger for Toni, plus you've got something for Thunder Rosa and Deonna Purrazzo to do on the side, especially when Thunder Rosa loses her opportunity against Toni Storm. Let's be honest. You know, that we've got things working here. This is how you set the seeds. I think people who just look at this, all they do is put the women in tag team matches. First of all, it's false. And second of all, I think they should do it more. There was a time they were doing it more last year where they were in tag team matches and trios matches. You know, when they were doing the Outcasts and Britt and Jamie and whoever the fuck, Shida, I think. Look, and they were all creating like these stories. Maybe it's because I watch a lot of Japanese pro wrestling that when I look at this, I'm like, this makes sense and it's fine. And to me, it's obvious what they're doing. The story is clear. Because that's how they establish stories in Japan. Because they don't stand around cutting promos on each other for 20 minutes. They let the matches happen. Shit happens in the match. Shit happens post-match. That's how you establish feuds. That's how stories advance in Puro. Now, I look at this, and I'm like, this is fine. This is absolutely fine. It does exactly what it has to do. You have your champion in there. In a tag team match, she takes a pin. So whoever pins her normally is next in line, right? And then on top of that, you've got Perazzo, who's annoyed at Thunder Rosa. I say this is a successful match on that front. Very successful. Next, we had Swerve Strickland hitting the ring for his open challenge. He defeated the Butcher, who answered the call. It was nice to see our boy Andy back in the ring. Bit of an enhancement match, of course, for Swerve. This was sub 5 minutes. This is what. So look at how I've been talking about this show so far, right? We've been talking about Mercedes Moné, and I've been talking a lot about her because she's a big signing. She's ostensibly going to be a big part of the show. You've got, you know, putting over Okada and how great he's been. Will Ospreay he's going to be the top guy of the company. What about Swerve? Swerve was being positioned, groomed, if you like. I know people don't like to use the word groomed because it has other connotations, but it's still, you know, it's the proper definition here. He was being set up, how about that, to be, you know, a top guy in the company, and the guy, you know, having him sniff out championship gold, right? And amidst all of this stuff, he's, we run the risk of losing sight of old Shane Strickland here. Because the strength of the feud that he has with Joe and with Hangman is really what's keeping him afloat. He's over. He hasn't lost. I'm not saying he's lost momentum. I say this is what we could be fearing here. You know, you've got other people in the wings. You know, we haven't seen Moxley on TV for weeks. I think there's a reason for that. There's a reason why Moxley hasn't been on Dynamites recently. Because we want to get these other guys over. Because we have to keep the focus on Swerve. We can't have too many tippy-top guys hanging around all at once that might potentially outshine the guy that we want to elevate, right? Because this is what we're doing with Swerve. So in the midst of all of this, they have to do more stuff like this leading into Dynasty. He can't just come out and do a thing and then get dragged back by security or whatever the fuck. They have to put Swerve in matches. He has to be doing things leading up to Dynasty. He absolutely has to. Because the Danielson-Ospreay match, sorry to say, pretty much outshines everything else right now. Not that there's much been announced. I think it's the only match that's been announced. But I mean, like, you know, that's the match of the show. That's the one they're selling tickets off of right now. So you have to be careful with Swerve. That's what I'm saying here. Anyway, the match in and about itself isn't what's important. After the match, he cuts a promo about Joe, and you know, Joe is going to give him exactly what he wants. Joe comes in and cuts a promo, basically saying that you know, not everyone can become a champion, especially when there's someone like me hanging around to take everything away that they have. So that's what he has to do to Swerve. So he's going to give him exactly what he wants. Then Don Callis pops up. The tremendous heat. Even in his home country. Yeah, here's another thing that bugs me with these Canadian things. You know, there's a lot of provinces, people in different, there's little feuds within the provinces, right? People from Quebec and people from Alberta, you know, they've got thoughts about each other. Yeah. I'm just saying. In fact, a lot of the country have thoughts about people from Quebec. Just, yeah. There'll be people that will be cheered from coast to coast. Bret Hart will be cheered from coast to coast. That's fine. Kenny Omega most likely too. Yeah, because that's a national pride thing, right? Don Callis can hit the bricks. Anyway, stupid little sidebar here, but it's the kind of thing that annoys me as a Canadian. Anyway, so Don Callis comes out and he basically makes a case that Kenesuke Takeshita has been on a winning streak and should be the number one contender. So then they make a match for next week, Swerve versus Kenesuke Takeshita on Dynamite. I'm seeing that in Quebec City. So I got two matches on that show. And then they're doing the Young Bucks versus Private Party, which likely might be a mess, but I'm glad that I'm going to see the Bucks again. Just tremendous stuff. Shaping up to be a nifty little Dynamite next week. And then the main event, the I Quit match, where Adam Copeland defeated Christian Cage to become the new TNT title champion. Title champion? The new TNT champion. This was great. This was tremendous, and I loved it. I thought it was a blast. We even got a bell pop, you know, as Adam Copeland is out there in his Maple Leafs-inspired gear. Christian Cage is not. And they go into the stands early on and they do a spot where they're wearing, where Copeland wears a Leafs jersey and he puts a Bruins jersey on Christian Cage, the heated rivals of any Leafs fan. And they start wailing on each other. People are like, they got the jerseys out of the stands from people. And I'm like, this was planted. Like, I hope, like, there's no one is walking around downtown Toronto with a Boston Bruins jersey. Not unless they want to get injured. Like, this is not like there wasn't a Bruins fan accidentally at this show. Come on now. But they're in a penalty box, right? And they're doing the hockey fight. Ah, fun little spot. It got good reactions. Great reactions from the crowd is what I should say. There's table spots. Copeland even splashes off of the top rope onto the floor through a table. Look, they're going through tables. They fight off the ramp. They fly off of it. There's a hockey net brought in. And I'm like, look, see, again. And Wada Ospreay in his promo, he talked about maple syrup and hockey. And I'm like, this is such, like, it's so low-hanging at this point. It's not even interesting. It's like when I hear Austin Theory talk about Vegemite sucks. You know, I'm like, when he's in Australia, I'm like, really? This is what we're doing? And I'm like, oh my God. You have to bring me some maple syrup. You know what? I'm so sick of maple syrup. It's maple syrup season right now. Like, everything is open. The sugar shacks are open and it's a big deal here. And I'm so sick of maple syrup and people referring to that as like, and moose. You know, if anything, the moose stuff is funny. Like that I enjoy, you know, but hockey, why not a good curling joke? How about a good curling joke once in a while? You know, I will even tolerate Tim Horton's jokes. At least it'd be fresh. I'm imploring the wrestling business I'm imploring you all to just like mix it up, change your references in regards to Canada, right? Don't talk about Justin Bieber anymore. Justin, that was a thing for a while. No, he's forgotten it. He's done. He's toast. Like, it doesn't even matter. No one will go like, boo. It was just like, oh yeah. You know, it's like, it's so tedious. Try some different stuff out. Anyway, but at least look, it's a hockey town and these guys are hockey fans. And I get it. It's just, you know, I look at this and it's like, of course there's a fucking hockey stick, right? That's used to, that Mother Wayne uses to crotch Copeland. And look. Anyway, Nick, Wayne, and Killswitch get involved. So do Daddy Magic and Dan Garcia, though. And they bring in handcuffs. And they lock up everyone, including Christian Cage, who is tied up on a turnbuckle, cannot move. And the greatest finish in the history of pro wrestling then ensues, where Adam Copeland kicks him in the balls. Cage doesn't quit. So then he repeatedly kicks him in the balls over and over and over and over and over again. And he still doesn't quit. So then Copeland pulls out the spike bat that he introduced. And he just wails it right in his no-nos. Right in Christian Cage's no-nos. And he threatens to use it, like, on his head. And that's when he quits. So, there you go. That was a tremendous finish to a really fun, really great TV I Quit match. Like, yeah, it's not one of the greatest of all time. But, again, look, you got Copeland. You have Christian Cage doing everything that he does best here. And I would not be surprised in the least that he structured this match, he put it together, and Copeland went around with it. Not that Copeland didn't add anything to this. There's some elements, you know, the hockey jersey stuff feels like an Adam Copeland addition. But this match, the way it was put together, the hardcore aspects, Christian Cage understands the wrestling audience. He understands the AEW wrestling audience. And I think it was really well put together. And it was and he just did, again, tremendous work. Adam Copeland, I got to tell you, go back, check the tape. I was very skeptical of what Adam Copeland was going to bring to AEW. And I got to say, I don't know if we can call this a home run, but it's easily a double, a triple, maybe even. I think his work here has been tremendous. There's nothing off-putting that I've seen in Adam Copeland's work in AEW. I think he's been used well, first and foremost. And when he's been used, he's been good to very good. And in this circumstance here, he's great. Like, I was afraid we'd fall into the melodrama and the nonsense that plagued, you know, his last years in WWE and even... You can even make an argument a little before that as well, before he retired. But no, like, either he got it, or people sat him down and told him, Adam, this isn't going to fly here. This will, though. I don't know what it, but whatever it is, he's been receptive. He's been running the razor. Like, he's been well used. I've been entertained by Adam Copeland in his AEW run so far. Now he's TNT champion. Let's see what happens outside of the... Let's see how much of a guiding hand Christian Cage had in all of this. Legitimately speaking. And I'm not trying to be facetious. I still think Christian Cage has a lot to do with the success of Adam Copeland's usage so far. Let's see how it goes. I'm very curious. I'm excited to see how this is going to go. Look, I can't even sit here and poo-poo the fact that he's TNT champion. I'm like, all right, let's see what's next. Good Dynamite. Like, overall, like I said, I enjoyed this show. A couple of things that, you know, annoyed me. But other than that, I thought this was a good show with some, look, we got two title changes that mix up the landscape. We've got some new challengers, new challengers coming in for titles. Yeah, we're getting Pac versus Okada, Jesus Christ. What do you want? What more do you want? We want more, because we're hungry. We're hungry for good wrestling. I'm hungry, period. I'm going to go, have a bite to eat. So we're going to wrap up this review. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching, for listening right now. If you're on YouTube right now, a like, a subscription would be tremendous. 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, 5-star ratings on Spotify, and the audio side of things. would also be equally tremendous. And I will be back very soon in a certain guise and form with some more wrestling commentary. It's terrible. We'll see you next time.